You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 17 September. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, Mia Kruger. We'll talk with the Federal Reserve and their interest rates. We'll talk discovery results. Pan African Resources chatting with the CEOs, profits double and debt halves. And Duncan McLeod on digital migration and the spectrum auctions. This show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb is Discovery's $3.4 billion COVID-19 provision enough. And Business Day, the OECD says SA will be slow to get on its feet and slashes GDP forecast for 2020 to minus 11.5%. Morning markets, red everywhere. US, we had the S&P overnight off 0.5%, NASDAQ down 1.3%, Asia off, Sydney down 1.1%, and Tokyo down 0.8%. Commodities all red, gold $1,946 an ounce, Rand 1641, and top 40 looking for a red opening, about 0.5% down.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Mia Kruger. She is a director, of course, at Kruger International. Mia, morning. Appreciate your time. We've had central banks left, right and center making announcements. We've got our own central bank later this afternoon, about 3 o'clock. We'll be announcing interest rates. Federal Reserve last night, no surprises that they kept rates at zero. Was it a surprise that they say basically they're going to keep it at zero until 2023? And I suppose, therefore, giving more life to the bull market.
Good morning, Simon. Well, clearly what they said was pretty cautious, and the market took it as that because the market did not lie for news. And when you look at all the numbers this morning, as you mentioned, we see red across the board, and the U.S. market turned down after these comments were made. So basically, Jerome Powell said that they will be continuing to keep their accommodative sort of arrangement with the economy until they're back at least a 2% inflation, which is going to take quite some time, and also until they are at their maximum capacity for employment, which can also take some time. And it's clear that they will be holding the interest rates near zero, and as you mentioned, until around 2023 or through 2023, which is a very long time. Now, the effect of it was that the dollar, the BXY index, is now it's actually moved up to a one-month high, where we've seen quite a bit of dollar weakness lately. And this has actually been negative for all the markets, even for commodities and gold during the night.
Yeah, and I take your point there. We're at that point. The good news, no rate increase, but that means bad news because it means the Fed is cautious, and absolutely they were. Discovery results, the profit almost disappeared completely. Largely, that was as a result of a massive sort of provision for COVID-19. But of course, there's a lot of new sort of businesses taking large amounts of cash, most notably the bank. Your take on Discovery results and Discovery itself generally?
Well, it does seem like they are still very optimistic about opportunities. They were spending $2.2 billion on new initiatives, and they had a 94% fall in their headline earnings. So that's pretty optimistic, if you ask me. But I was also quite surprised at the share price movement. The share has actually done quite well compared to the rest of the market locally. I mean, the share is still up despite the 2% drop yesterday, still up year to date, which is pretty good. But I think, you know, there are a couple of things that sort of just show the difficult economic environment that they are actually dealing in South Africa, and the fact that they are struggling to really up the new participants of their bank. It might be a case of, there could be various cases for that, but even though they are focusing sort of on higher net worth customers, they are struggling, in my view, to actually up the banking clients. So yes, it does seem like they are operating in a very, very difficult area. They have made a large provision. We'll have to see whether that's going to be enough. But it's a tough environment. That became really, really clear when I went through the results.
That's a good point. And particularly with the bank, I mean, they're aiming at those high net worth individuals. A, small pool of individuals in South Africa.
Yes.
And B, hugely competitive. Every other bank wants those clients as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other problem in South Africa is that a lot of those high net worth clients are becoming less and less as the environment is becoming competitive. Yeah. It's not only South African banks that vie for that business. As many of these sort of high middle class and upper class clients are actually moving their base offshore.
We'll leave that there. That's Mia Kruger. She's a director at Kruger International. Mia, appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Kobus Lutz, he's CEO of Pan African Resources. They had results out yesterday. It was for the year in June. Headline earnings per share up 93%. Net debt down 41.2%. Kind of expect that in this type of environment. Kobus, morning. Appreciate your time. Is it fair to say that your operations are now pretty much back to normal after the challenges of hard lockdown sort of in the last quarter of your financial year?
Good morning, yes. It certainly is fair to say. I mean, we were fortunate also, even during the lockdown, that we managed to operate our tailings businesses at pretty much close to full capacity with a much reduced workforce. But yes, I mean, at this point, all of the operations are full steam ahead.
During the period, as I say, I mean, you obviously, you know, cash really boosted. You paid a dividend. Your debt is coming down markedly. You're now going to be bringing the Egoli project into production. That will raise some debt, I imagine, but you're fairly confident that your payback is probably going to be less than 5 years. In other words, a bit more debt, but gone in a couple of years.
Yes, I mean, in this gold price environment, which is for more than R1 million per kilo, assuming we can make our production forecasts for the year ahead, we should be pretty much debt-free by June or July of 2021. So, yes, I mean, we're definitely clearing the balance sheet. In terms of Egoli, which is our development project at Evander, that's going to be about 3 years to develop. So the capital is not all spent at once. It's a phased approach. I mean, as you say, I mean, the payback that we're forecasting on Egoli is actually very good. I mean, we should be sort of have all the capital paid back in about a year or two after we have the city state in terms of production.
Is Egoli, earlier in the year, you were putting out announcements around it. Is that the incredibly high yield mine that you've been referencing?
No, so the high, incredibly high grade mine is actually the consort operation of Barberton. I mean, that's where we sort of found up to 4% gold or 40,000 grams per ton. That's in one area, the 42 level at Consort, which certainly has given that operation a boost.
I mean, that is a. I think at the time you commented, you can actually see the gold in the ground, which is absolutely a staggering sense. A lot of your mines are older mines. You referenced Barberton. This is one of the oldest areas of mining in the world for gold. You mentioned Evander. This is a mine that's been around absolutely forever and a day. The mines in South Africa are old. You're managing to operate them. You're managing to keep the costs down, and that's perhaps the critical component. Is that a case of if you find perhaps, you know, more expensive, you simply move on? There's enough in those mines to keep those all-in sustained costs around the $1,000.
Yeah, well, we're targeting $1,000 in the year ahead, and you know, we have a very unique mix in terms of the underground, which is high grade, but then also our surface tailings operations, and specifically the Elikhulu operation at Evander. That gives us about 60,000 ounces a year at an all-in sustaining cost of just over $600. So that's exceptional by any standard, South African or international. And that sort of manages, I mean, that allows us to certainly keep our all-in costs down for the group also.
Okay, I mean, again, a really impressive price there. The price gold that you received during the period, what was your sort of average price sort of per ounce or per kilo? Trying to get a sense of, because obviously gold has moved quite significantly since your June year end.
Yes, so on average we received, I think, just over 750,000 rand per kilo. That's for the year ending June. And at this point, gold is just over R1 million per kilo. So obviously, you know, if if the gold price remains, then that should assist us in the year ahead.
Yeah, okay, so that's almost exactly an extra third to add to it. Big if there, if rand and gold stays where it is. And you don't hedge any operations. You don't look at this and think, this is a juicy price. Could we perhaps hedge some at that million rand a kilo level?
Well, we have hedges in place up to December, whereafter we'll be hedged. We'll be sort of unhedged. We're fortunate, as I said, in that our unit cost of production is fairly low. So, I mean, at this gold price, we have a high margin. And we don't really see the benefit now of going and hedging massively again. Most of our investors want exposure to the gold price, and that's what they need to give them.
Yeah, fair point. I'm one of those investors. I agree with you on that. The hedging seems weird. It's the risk we take as an investor. Last question. Safety has always been a big issue in the mining industry. Certainly in the last, I want to say, decade, maybe two decades, it really has come to the fore. And with credit to the mining industry, safety is working. There's still the occasional tragic loss of life. But by and large, we've managed to get mining to a point where it is a fairly safe occupation, notwithstanding the dangers of, frankly, explosions underground.
Yes, I mean, I think it certainly was an effort, a combined effort from labor, from the mining companies, and from government. And as you say, I mean, I think we can be proud of certainly the safety achievements the industry's achieved, but we're still working to improve further as we have to.
We'll leave it at that. It's Kobus Loots, he's CEO, Pan African Resources. And as I said, disclaimer, I am a shareholder there. Kobus, appreciate the time. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI. Life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Duncan McLeod, he's a founder and editor at techcentral.co.za. Duncan put a tweet out earlier in the week referring to digital migration, and I have to be honest, I had forgotten about digital migration. Duncan, thanks for your time. Digital migration is essentially getting the country off analog TV, getting us onto digital TV. If my memory serves, that was supposed to have happened in the entire SADC region by like 2015.
That's right. In fact, if you go all the way back to when we first started this project, it was kickstarted by Ivy Matsepe-Kasaburi, who was the communications minister in the Thabo Mbeki administration. So we're going back that far. She promised this would be done by the end of 2010 originally. So we're 10 years past the original deadline set by the government and 5 years past the deadline we agreed to with the International Telecommunication Union to get this done. So it's become a bit of an embarrassment for the country, I'm afraid.
It is. And I know a number of listed companies who'd hoped on the set-top boxes. Altron was one, another was Elly's. They've both, of course, moved on from that. I mean, the key point of this is, you know, it's not just that I'll get a better quality TV broadcast, which I will. More importantly, it frees up the spectrum. In essence, analog is messy, digital's not, so we've got all that extra spectrum that we could then parcel out to telcos and others for their networks, both voice, but perhaps more importantly, data.
Exactly. And it's the reason that countries around the world have gone through the digital migration process. Many countries have actually concluded this and have assigned the spectrum in the digital dividend bands, as they're called, to operators. Unfortunately, we're way behind. What's sad about the situation, Simon, is that the spectrum bands we're talking about here are particularly technically well-suited for delivering broadband in rural areas because of the nature of the spectrum. You don't need many towers, so you can actually deliver really good 4G services in the rural Transkei, for example, at relatively low cost. At these delays that we've seen, the fact that we haven't been able to get this transition done and award the spectrum to the operators means that our mobile data prices are higher than they would otherwise be.
Yeah, higher, and as you point out, I mean, you know, sitting here in Joburg, we both get decent data. We've got fiber. to the folks who sort of in the middle of nowhere, who are struggling, who are suffering. Is it still going to happen? Is it not just perhaps too late? Has that boat maybe not sailed? We could go straight to, forget the digital TV. We could go straight to over the top and almost just say, forget the box, set-top boxes. Just sort of get your TV via satellite. Get your TV via your mobile device.
That's my take on it. The government, us taxpayers, has spent over 10 billion rand on this project to date. And I suppose you don't really want to give up all of that investment. We've got almost a million set-top boxes still sitting in post office warehouses waiting to be distributed. So there has been a lot of investment. But I think we are actually reaching the point, Simon, where we need to say, well, actually, DTT, digital terrestrial television, is now an old technology. It wasn't when we started talking about it, but it is now. And satellite has come a long way. It's a lot cheaper than it used to be, and it may in fact be the best way of getting people connected. And in the cities, you're right, people are getting wired up to fiber. And in fact, I bought a new TV just 2 months ago, and for the first time, I haven't connected it to a satellite dish, and I haven't connected it to a terrestrial antenna. I watch all my television streamed on the internet.
Yeah, in fact, I got a new TV, and then I thought maybe I should get an antenna, and then I didn't know where to get it from or what to do with it, and I'm with you. It plugs into a router, and it gives me all the TV that I need. The other issue that's delaying us is the spectrum auctions, and again, this is something that's been going on for an age. If I recall correctly, part of the COVID response was our president saying that he was going to fast track it. That's been kicked down the road to March now as well.
That's right. It was meant to happen by the end of this calendar year. They've moved it out by 3 months, which is not too bad. I'm actually fairly confident that we're heading in the right direction on the spectrum auction, the digital migration issue notwithstanding, of course, which is interlinked. But we've got the strongest ICASA council in place now that we've had in years. I think there's some very sensible people on that council now, and I think they're well positioned to actually run a good auction process going forward. So I think that side of things is actually running fairly smoothly. The problem is that ICASA wants to license spectrum in five different spectrum bands, two of which are the digital dividend bands, which are still being used by the analog broadcasters. So the processes are interlinked, and we have to get that digital migration done or scrap it entirely so that the spectrum which ICASA is going to be licensing at the end of March can actually be used.
Is this new spectrum coming on? I mean, is it just sort of adjunct, in other words, giving more capacity to the telcos? Is it perhaps 5G required spectrum? I mean, or is it really just we need more because we use more?
It's both. ICASA, the South African policy legislative environment in the sector, no longer does technology based licensing. So it's technology neutral licensing. So there's simply makes the spectrum available and the operators decide what they want to do with it. But we do know that the spectrum bands that are being licensed through this process are suitable for both 4G, for expanding 4G coverage. And in fact, South Africa has never actually specifically licensed 4G spectrum. The operators have actually, MTN Vodacom particularly, have refarmed or reallocated their 2G and 3G spectrum so that they can roll out limited 4G networks. So what we're actually doing now through this licensing process is something that should have happened 10 years ago when other countries licensed 4G spectrum. But ICASA is including a band in this in these five spectrum lots, if I can call them that, that is suitable for 5G, and that's the 3.5 gigahertz band. So I think that once that spectrum is allocated post-March 2021, we will see the rapid deployment in South Africa of 5G networks.
A quick last question. I remember when this was happening back in Europe and America in the early days, back in the sort of 1990s, late 90s. It was huge revenue streams for the government. I mean, is the price of ICASA going to get significant enough, or is it going to be useful but not going to help a budget deficit as we currently sit on?
Well, I think this is actually the first time as a country that we're going to be auctioning spectrum. In the past, we've had what are called beauty contests where operators compete to be licensed, and then the licensing fees are relatively low. I think the license fees for 5G in South Africa were about 5 million rand per operator, which is tiny. Some of the licensing fees we saw in Europe through the auction process that we're going to be running. So we don't actually know how much the operators are going to be bid, but I think that ICASA has said that it's going to set a reserve price on each lot of spectrum of 2 billion rand. So we're looking at at least 10 billion rand to be raised by the fiscus, and it may end up being quite a bit more than that. I think especially if we see some international telcos participating in this process, but it's not clear yet who's going to participate. We'll certainly see Vodacom and MTN and Telkom participating, mm-hmm. locally, possibly one or two other smaller players. I think the big question is, do we see a company like France's Orange coming in and bidding for spectrum as well, which is a possibility. We don't know.
I hadn't even thought about the foreign players. 10 billion, not giant, but you know what? Rather have it than not have it. Duncan McLeod, founder, editor, techcentral.co.za. Appreciate your time. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the app. Podcast available from 7 a.m. This show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Big thanks to my team, Eddie and Kudora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.